Accession number 28645, Rule 22.
Suzanne, last time we left it, you had just run away from Paris, arrived in London, it's 1954, and you are about to hold your first exhibition of watercolours in London.
Yes, now that was quite a journey, that was, from Paris. The atmosphere in the household was absolutely terrible. My stepdaughter had just lost a young man she thought was in love with her, and he dumped her. And she was the sort of person who only falls in love once and then goes wham. Very hard type. Not liable to fall in love, and she did fall in love, and he left her. And so there was that in the house, and then there was the difficulty between my husband and myself in the house. And what with one thing and what with another, it was terrible.
Before we proceed, can you just touch on the difficulty between yourself and your husband?
Well, no, that's a long story.
All right.
And the cook fell ill with gastric flu, and I went to say goodbye to her. No, I went to see how she was and see what she needed. So I caught this thing. And I started off from Paris with gastric flu of the most violent kind. It was quite awful. I don't know how I managed that journey, I really don't. So I arrived in London, where I was met by one of the reporters who'd been on the case in Egypt. I'd got to know several of them when they were there. And he'd booked me in a hotel in London. Well, that was that. Then we went and visited my mother's house to see if that was all right. I don't know where she was at the time. I've no idea. Probably travelling with my father. And I, the year before, when I saw that retirement was coming on, and I was determined not to spend time at the house by the sea.
You saw that your husband's retirement was
That's
coming.
That's right. And considering all the tribes collected there, I knew it was no place for me during the summer.
In Brittany.
That's right. And so I started looking around for a little cottage of my own the year before. And I'd found one. And which I duly bought. So that was there, and I was going on to there. I'd moved. Well, that's a whole other story. Anyhow, I had this little cottage as a bolt hole. Right. Anyhow, we stopped in London and then went off to the little cottage. And from there I prepared the exhibition, prepared my pictures, framed them and all that sort of thing, mounting and all the rest of it. The exhibition was in May and it was in Cooling Galleries in New Bond Street. In those days they allowed you to rent the gallery for exhibitions. People did. And so I had my exhibition. And Jack, the reporter, he got several reports of it in papers and so on and so forth. So it went quite well. And the president and vice president of the Royal Society of Miniature Painters came to visit, as I had miniatures on show. And the result of that was that in the autumn I was elected to associate membership of the society, which was my start there in 54. So that became a great interest. And so then that finished, that exhibition. And I went off to the cottage and Jack, who was then, what was he, night editor of the Daily Mail, and he suggested that he would finance a stand for me at the Evening News Flower Show, which was in September, I think, no, July, somewhere around about that, July, I think. So I immediately started getting pictures ready again and went up to London with them. And they had this show at, the Big Show Place.
I'm sorry?
The Big Show Place.
Olympia.
It was Evening Flower Show, Evening News. And so I had a stand there. And that was the first of my slips. Everything in my life, all my opportunities have slipped away from me. They've been there and they've gone. It's a very strange thing, but it's my fate. Because a woman came up with her husband, and they were people who had a very important gallery down in Nice. And she absolutely fell in love with the miniatures and wanted her husband to sponsor me and show them. And he wanted to give me half the price I was asking. So I said, no, I couldn't go as low as that. So he marched off. He was one of those. And I can still see him dragging her away by the hand. And she was saying, but it's a genius, it's a genius. Do stop. It was no good. So that went. And
but that was not the opportunity that you lost, was it?
Yes, that was the one I lost.
But it's the opportunity you declined, not lost, but declined on economic grounds, no?
No, I wouldn't say I declined it. I merely said that that wasn't enough for my work.
Well, that is a decline. I mean, you've declined it on price grounds. That's fair. You felt you were being undervalued. That's not quite the same as an opportunity lost.
I reckon it is, because if I hadn't held out, I would have got it.
Of course, and if you'd given it away free, the same might have
applied. So it was still an opportunity that I didn't take up.
Which is different from an opportunity lost, but...
No, I don't think it is.
All right.
Because I don't think I could have done anything else. I mean, what he was proposing was ridiculous. Anyhow, never mind, it doesn't matter, it's gone. But I do remember the show. There were quite a lot of nice things to see. But I'd always had a dream. I had once been privileged to touch a cape made of chinchilla fur. Have you ever felt chinchilla fur? It's out of this world. It's the softest thing on earth. It's absolutely gorgeous. And my dream was to hold a live chinchilla in my hands with all that softness and the warmth. And sure enough, at that time, there was a craze for chinchilla farms. There weren't many of them, there were just two or three, but it amounted to a craze because they're very difficult to keep, those little animals. And they were showing at the Evening News Flower Show. And I found them there. And the woman took to me at once and allowed me to handle them. And incredible, absolutely incredible. And they are adorable little animals. And that softness, there's just nothing like it. Of course, they cost about £1,000 a skin when they were making furs. But these were live. That was lovely. Was worth the whole show. So that was that. So then I retired to my cottage. Because I didn't go back to Paris.
Did not go back to Paris?
Not then.
And you retired to your cottage where?
Here, in Dorset. Just 2.5 miles along the road. They've ruined it now. They've pulled it down and built a big house, and they've completely ruined my cottage. Anyhow.
So it was not this cottage that we're in now today?
No. No, it was a little too up and too down, which I bought from the black sheep of the family of, now who were the brewers? Wine merchants, big wine merchants. Can't remember. Anyhow, he was the black sheep of the family, and he transported horses to races. And he had this little cottage, and they were moving. So I bought it from them. It was really quite rough. I mean, it was the downstairs rooms were flagstones.
When did you buy it?
50, must have been 54.
Oh, you bought it in order not to return to Paris?
That's right. It was 53 or 54. No, I returned to Paris after I had it.
All right, okay.
But then I left Paris altogether in 54 and went to the cottage. And that began my painting life, and also I was immersed in the wildlife of my garden. It was a lovely garden with lots of nooks and crannies and full of wildlife and birds. At one time I had 17 tame great tits who used to come and sit in a line on my arm. It was a wonderful life, absolutely marvellous. There was somebody who kept poultry nearly next door. One evening I went into the kitchen and I had a cupboard with a fold-down piece for making pastry and so on and so forth. And I quite often kept it down and put things on it. I went into the kitchen and I found this beautiful hen roosting on it coming through the window. And she wouldn't leave me. She stayed with me for quite a long time. She just chose to come in. And she was a lovely Rhode Island red, fully feathered, such as you don't see nowadays. And then she disappeared. I think Master caught up with her and did away with her. But all sorts of lovely things used to happen. I had pipistrelle bats in the roof, things you don't have nowadays. They got in twice. I found one on the carpet in the sitting room, and I found another one in the sink in the kitchen. So I decided it was time that the pipistrelle went, and I thought I'd have the holes in the roof blocked up. And the next night there wasn't a pipistrelle to be seen. They say that bats know if you're going to get rid of them, and they just disappeared. Extraordinary.
Can I just ask this question? You decided not to return to Paris, so you've left your husband behind.
That's right.
What did Louis think of this?
Oh, well, he was terribly upset. I mean, we were all upset. We were all dreadfully upset. Terrible atmosphere. That was that.
Did he come to England?
No, he didn't. No. No, he didn't.
He never came to England?
Not then, no. He was there before, because when we came back from Egypt, he was in England.
No, I'm sorry, he never came to England subsequent to 1954.
No,
no. So after 1954, he never came to England?
No. And let me see. I was just thinking, I went twice to Paris. That's right. I was on the verge of having my big exhibition at Liberty's. So I met the woman who was in charge of the art section of Liberty's, Bayer, and she fell in love with my painting and said I must have an exhibition at Liberty's. And I had a small one first, and then went on to prepare a large one, which was in 78, I think it was. 70. Oh, I can't remember. I'll put it in afterwards. So So I did a tremendous... By that time, I'd started on my toadstools. So I had.
By which time, Suzanne?
She was 70.
I'll pause for a minute.
Yeah.
Suzanne, we've had a few problems with dates. We're trying to fill in the period from 54-55 to when you had two exhibitions and liberties in 77 and 78, I think. And you're now going to try and, if you like, count backwards.
Yes. So stupid.
And I think you mentioned one in 72. In Berkeley Square.
Yes, and I had several exhibitions, one after the other. There was one in off Berkeley Square. There was Liberties, which was the very big one. And the next one I had was at the Mall Galleries. And every time I had a show, there was a heat wave. It was quite remarkable. There was a heat wave which kept the people away. So that one only got about half the number of people that one should have had. And it happened each time. But that was my exhibiting period. And I did a lot of exhibition. And I was working on the toadstools. I'd fallen in love with toadstools.
Now, the purpose of these exhibitions was to sell, or not?
Yes. Well, to get known and... as a byproduct to sell.
And to seek commissions or not?
Well, yes, whatever came along.
And were you successful in that?
Mediumly. The Liberty one was a success. But again, there was an opportunity that went. I mean, my parents were around at that time. So they came up one day to see the show and to take me to lunch. So finally, they said, we really must go to lunch. Much against my will, I left the show because in my experience, things happen when you turn your back. And sure enough, a book publisher came and wanted to publish a book. Came in the lunch hour and never returned. Otherwise I'd have had a book out, but it wouldn't have been anything like my book. It would have been just an ordinary book.
Just on this question, Suzanne, how many books have you published?
Just the two toadstool books and the miniature book for the Royal Miniature Society. I did one for them. Which was a nice book. It wasn't the quality of the other two, but I was restricted by the amount of money I had to spend. And then a Abudi, of course, but I don't know what it says, a publisher for a Abudi.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I don't know what it says on a Abudi for the publisher.
Lady Mead Press.
Ooh, yes.
Gillingham, just down the corner.
That's right. Brown and I set up a press together.
I'm sorry, can you remind me, Brown? Who is Brown again?
Brown Nicholson. He was the owner of Surdor Press. And we set up a press together because we thought we might publish some more books, which, of course, we didn't. And that led us into a lot of trouble because he had some solicitors looking after his affairs. I think they tried to charge us £500 or £600 for Lady for the press. I refused to pay. We had quite a do with it. However, it came out all right in the end. Yes, we formed that press in order to publish a Abudi.
And did Lady Mead publish other things subsequently?
No.
After a Abudi?
No.
The Lady Mead published...
We closed it down.
All right. Okay.
Because these people were going to make exorbitant charges for doing nothing. So we closed it down.
And who published your two postal books?
I did.
Privately?
Yes.
Right. Can I ask you this? We have this 20-year gap, which was slightly less than 20 years. We've got it down to 18 years now, between 54, 55 and 72. How did you support yourself during this period? How were you supported financially?
My husband made me an allowance of £300 a year.
And that stayed 300 throughout?
He didn't give me anything at first. I had a bit over. But he should have, legally, he should have given me a lot more, but anyhow, I didn't grumble. So I lived on £300 a year.
That was quite modest for those days.
It was very modest. Bread and margarine.
And did you have income from any other sources, other than painting?
No.
You didn't?
No. My mother gave me birthday presents and that sort of thing, which helped.
Because she still had modest property in the north?
Yes. But and occasionally I sold something. No, but I was perfectly happy. It was my little cottage. The rates were £9 a year, which was a help. And I've still got my old account book, and it's done in farthings. Eggs were a shilling a dozen. Bread was practically
except
nothing.
Except when the Red Rooster gave them free. The Red Hen. Rhode Island Red.
No, she laid somewhere else. I don't know where she laid. I never found her nest. She must have had it somewhere in the garden. Bless her heart. She was a lovely fowl. She really was. She was a beautiful hen. And she just sat there and let me stroke her and behaved in a perfectly tame fashion. She was lovely. But so I had all sorts of tame birds.
Did you?
Mm.
I'm sorry, I just want to pursue this financial question because A, it's interesting. B, you're going to need it for your own story.
Yeah.
And C, it may help you unlock the key for this afternoon to this gap that we've got. Because what I'm going to ask is, how did you, can you give me a description of your working day, or if not your working day, your working, a working year, and how you would publicise and promote the work?
I didn't. I just worked, and I showed at the shows. There was the RI, where one sent into that, one sent into various shows, one showed at the RHS. One just kept showing at shows that were on, open shows. There was the Royal Institute of Watercolour Painters, and they had a show every year. And at that time they were in their own gallery in I really don't know what's wrong with me today.
Well, don't worry, leave those minor facts.
Anyhow, they had their own gallery and they went and sold it. It was a very stupid affair. However, there were things like that. There was the RWS. There was a flower painting show in January. There were all sorts of exhibitions to which one sent. That was how one kept oneself occupied.
And small dribbles of income would come through?
Hmm. And I was just occupied with my painting and with my garden. And interest in my animals and birds. It was a wonderful time because there were all sorts of animals that are gone now. There were mole crickets. I don't think I've ever heard anybody mention a mole cricket, not in all the years. I had them in my garden. They used to burrow along like baby moles. They left little tracks like moles leave. They're grey and furry. Beautiful little animals. And I had all sorts of birds. I don't know, dozens of types of birds, which I duly fed. I took an interest in their nesting and waited for the babies to fly, got up in time. They always flew at about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Well, when they fledged and left the nest?
Yes. They always left very early in the morning. There were all sorts of things that I observed which I've never heard anywhere else. One day I saw something bouncing about on the lawn. I thought it was a bumblebee. It looked like a bumblebee, so I went out to investigate, and it wasn't. It was a baby midget shrew. And I've never heard of midget shrews since, but they did exist. And it was about the size of a bumblebee, hopping about. And there were all sorts of things that went on in the garden. One time I had 3 pairs of robins, and their territory was absolutely, completely marked as if you'd put a tape across the end of it.
And they get very aggressive if a bird transgresses it.
Oh yes, well, what do you expect? Naturally, they protect their particular in.